It is 24 minutes past 9 o'clock here in the Central Time Zone of Central Texas on a Transcendent Tuesday. Dr. Don Clark joins us from Garden Valley, Texas, which is a stone's throw. Well, several stone's throws from where we are. You're about 200 miles, I think, from where we are here in Central Texas. And he's in a beautiful spot. Garden Valley is just is a wondrous place any time of the year. And he grows grapes in the summer there. But right now, his grapes are looking pretty sad, I think. What do grapes do in the winter, Don?
They're poised. They're poised.
Yeah, they're
getting ready.
Actually, the sugar is being built up in the root system, mm-hmm. Getting ready for spring, and we're actively pruning our vines this week. And so we're getting ready for spring, too. And when spring comes, everything starts growing, the weeds and the vines and, you know, big insects, and everybody comes out. Yeah. And so the work starts.
Do you still have a wild pig problem there, do you? Are they still around?
Oh, they're around. And I heard some good news. Mm-hmm. Some of them are migrating to California. The pigs heard that there were some vacancies in California, so they're heading that way.
All right. That is good
homeless
news.
Homeless people are leaving.
Yeah.
Yeah. They got to fill those homes that are going to be vacant.
Yeah, I think so. Right. Yeah. Well, there are a lot of vacancies because people are streaming into Texas from California, and with good reason, most of them. And if they're interviewed, I've seen a couple of the folks interviewed on local media, and they said, no, we're not bringing our politics. We're getting away from that here. This is why we're coming. And, of course, some of them are coming for all the new businesses, like Tesla starting up in the Austin area. And other business, high-tech businesses, sucking people out of Silicon Valley. So I guess we need to be on our toes and make sure that we don't turn blue down here in Texas.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah. Dr. Don is a member of the Board of Creation Moments, so we normally talk about creation. Well, that would make sense, wouldn't it? Genesis and both the history and what science teaches us to apply to Genesis to elicit even more knowledge and information from that book. This morning, we've got an article from the Institute for Creation Research that talks about a bone. Is this paleontology or archaeology, Don? What is the science that found that bone? What do you call that?
Well, it's paleontology because we're talking about bones and humans and things like that. They called it archaeology. Probably the archaeologists were doing a dig, and then they came up. They found all of these bones, mm-hmm. A lot of animal bones, but they did happen to eventually recognize that there was a human rib.
This is not a fossil, but it's a real bone. I mean,
it's a real bone. So the story goes, and this is the importance of finding a rib bone in this particular area. It was in the Ubidea.
That's a good interesting
in
word.
An area called Ubidea, I believe that's the way it's pronounced. I could mm-hmm. be completely wrong.
I think you're really close
in the Jordan
there.
Valley in Israel. south, about 2 miles south of the Sea of Galilee, and the finding of this human bone contradicts a theory of evolution, at least a guess of evolution. One of the guesses of evolution, of course, is that humans evolved from chimp-like ancestors about 3 to 6 million years ago. In Africa, and then everybody kind of migrated from Africa to the rest of the world. Well, creationists have a different model. The Bible gives us a different model of where we originated from, which we'll talk about at the end of this article here. But Israel's archaeologists found these bones. Actually, it was in 1966, they found all of these clusters of bones, and it contained, for example, saber-toothed tigers and mammoth
bones.
Mammoths.
Yeah.
And horses and rhinoceroses and hippos and all kinds of chimps, you know, were all collected in this particular area. But one of them was a human bone, apparently of a, they say, between 6 to 12 years old, but of unusually large size, because they say, well, you know, based on the size of this rib bone, of this particular bone, vertebrae bone, it looks like this individual was 5 feet tall and possibly weighed 100 to 110 pounds. So for a 6-year-old or even a 12-year-old, that would be pretty big, which would make the person at full, you know, when they were full grown, over 6 feet tall. So
yeah, that's interesting, because I'm told that in Bible times, meaning first century, the average height of a man was 5 feet 2 inches tall in that part of the world. And that would have been discovered probably by multiple explorations in tombs and bones and relics, and it's probably pretty accurate. So to find a young person of that height from a much earlier time suggests maybe pre or post flood, do you think?
Well, they're claiming it was post flood. You know, as opposed to pre flood. Now, could it have been at the time of the flood? Well, possibly, because, you know, you have all of the other bones kind of gathered in one place. They didn't really describe what the finding was. And if it's all kind of mixed, you know, together, then you would think, okay, well, that that individual was someone who got trapped in the floods, and eventually all of these bones settled in one place. So, you know, that could very well be a possibility, you know, as well. So it could have been a pre-flood individual, which, you know, being tall would not be unsuspected or unsurprised.
Now, they do explain that a little bit toward the end of the article here. I'm just kind of scanning ahead. But they figured this might have been after the dispersal from the Tower of Babel, because it was found in an Ice Age era strata, Pleistocene, along with hand axes made from volcanic rock. So that kind of helps date the bone then.
Yes, it does. Okay, so it was post flood, but probably not too long after the flood. And as they conclude that, hey, you know, instead of you know, all of the humans coming from Africa, creationist and biblical, you know, scholars obviously have a better explanation from it, which is, okay, we know that, you know, the descendants of Noah wound up in the Shinar Valley, and this fellow called Nimrod led the people to rebellion against God, and they built a tower up to the heavens. So we're going to go to the heavens, and I guess Nimrod was going to declare himself as God, as Satan did, or as the serpent did in the garden eventually. So we had a kind of a repeat of that, and God says, okay, nah, we're not going to allow this. So they disperse. They, of course, we know the story, you know, the languages are confused, they can't work together anymore, and they wind up dispersing upon
how long after the flood did that happen? Do you, and Genesis gives us some hints, because some of the people were still alive, some of Noah's Noah himself may have been alive when the Tower of Babel was brought down.
Yes, that is possible, because it wouldn't have taken very long. How, you know, how long does it take for people to multiply? And well, they were supposed to multiply and fill the earth, but they didn't fill the earth. They were congregating in one place, and so you know, how many people were there? I don't know if there's ever been any.
Well, I think it's safe to say it would have been
hundreds of thousands. Or there had to be a lot of people.
A century or two would be logical to place to kind of a matrix to put over that. Okay.
Yeah, I would think so, and because there were cities around the Tower of Babel. The Tower of Babel was placed within. Kind of walking distance, if you will, you know, within reach from three major cities or villages, if you will. And that was kind of a place of worship.
Let's take a look at for a second about this evolutionary claim, though. They claim that humans did not migrate out of Africa until about 100,000 to 200,000 years ago. So this bone being around if that time is realistic, that means that this bone doesn't prove anything, except that there are also human remains that were found in a Southeast Asian island and in Eastern Europe that predate the expansion out of Africa by a long way, according to evolutionary standards, like 1.8 to 2 million years. So,
yeah, well, and this bone by the old measuring stick would be 1.5 million years old.
Mm-hmm.
So there's plenty of evidence to say that there was humans around out of Africa long before the 100 to 200
year
period. That the evolutionists would claim that everybody came out of Africa.
See, now we're down to old Earth, young Earth again, which is we always wind up doing. How long ago, where do you date the flood and the Tower of Babel or Babel?
About 4,500 years ago,
mm-hmm.
Somewhere along that line. So, I mean, yeah, the dating, which, we've gotten into, before, is, you got radiocarbon dating, you got other isotopic dating methods, you've got, because this bone was found in this strata, it has to be X millions of years old. That type of dating, but what the evolutionists don't realize is that the flood created these strata to begin with, so all of the layers that we see and that we're dating things by is actually a result of the flood, which would then bring it back to 4,000 to 4,500 years ago. The dating is off with a lot of these things. And so we have to then go, do we have other dating methods? And, Genesis actually provides a genealogy and a dating method because, it says when so-and-so died, he had so many sons, and then he lived 100 years or whatever it happens to be, and then he passed away, and his sons lived so long, and then they had children, and so you can piece all of these things together, and you find when you do that the age of at least people are the age of the human race between 6 to 10,000 years, depending on whether or not they have skipped some ages in the Bible, which I don't think they did, because it's pretty accurate.
It looks pretty thorough, actually, the way it's laid out there. I have a question, though. David and I were talking about this before we connected with you today. Do we know by what Genesis tells us where the ark was built, where it started? Because it not necessarily, as they say, that ended it up in the mountains of Ararat, which would be southern Turkey, which is some distance away from, say, the Jordan Valley Rift in Israel, or where Babylon was. Do we know, have any idea, any clue where the ark was to begin with?
Where were most of the people? And we know, for example, in Genesis chapter 2, that where the garden was, which was east of Eden, where the garden was, and it was the Tigris and Euphrates River are mentioned. It was where those rivers started from, and there were four rivers that emanate from the garden. And
another piece of science I could throw in here, I don't want to derail your train of thought, but there are satellite photos of recent vintage that show ancient riverbeds that seemed to converge at the tip of the Persian Gulf, which is now underwater. Mm-hmm. And the speculation, and I guess it is speculation, but this is interesting evidence, because otherwise we wouldn't be aware of these old riverbeds, and if not for satellite photography, that the Garden of Eden may have been where the Persian Gulf meets Iraq right now, but it happens to be underwater. And who knows how deep.
Jim did mention that there was another theory that we postulated, that because of all the lions and bears and tigers and critters lying in this one area, all this stuff, along with human bones, that there were actually more than one ark. And that this was one of the
drone arcs. Noah's fleet?
There was a fleet of arcs.
I don't think so.
And this was one of the ones that crashed.
No, we never did, Don. We never discussed that.
We primarily dismissed that. We dismissed that theory. We dismissed that theory.
I think that would be a good thing.
Yeah, we came to the conclusion that it was just a feeble interpretation.
There could have been some arcs for meat eaters and some for vegetarians, for example.
Sure, yeah.
Because the idea that they could all gather in one large ark is astounding, you know. We're pulling your leg, Don.
Now the theory is going off the rails.
Yeah, all these harebrained ideas, you know.
Harebrained, we say.
That'd be a nice way to put it,
Don't confuse the audience here.
Yeah, that'd be the nice way to put it.
Unfortunately, the audience is much brighter than we are.
Where did the ark originate? Well, you know, no one is family and probably all the people that lived on the earth at that particular time, you know, lived in certainly, you know, the Middle East. Was it Israel? You know, probably not, but probably further north of that. Like I said, the evidence that we have, at least that people originated from the garden and the waterheads of these four rivers, the Tigris and the Euphrates.
Now, directly north of that point would be Babylon, not very far. I mean, Baghdad is south of Baghdad, is the presumed site of Babylon. So that would make sense.
That general region, I don't think we can pinpoint it, unless we found significant more evidence.
We can assume that people would have settled around the riverbanks in what's other than that is desert. I mean, near the water, things can grow and food can grow. So it would be logical to think that they expanded up the Tigris and Euphrates, and that's where the civilization spread that ended up with the Ark at some point.
Right. And, of course, you know, Adam and Eve had to leave the garden because of their sin. And then Cain, obviously, who slayed his brother Abel, was cast out into the wilderness. And, how far away did he go? Probably not too far, because he had to marry somebody and it had to come from one of his sisters, from Adam and Eve again. And so, they all probably generally lived in the area, and they're going to live in an area that is, easier to farm or easier to get their food and water in particular. And so I think it's a safe bet that the Middle East and the northern part would probably be where they were, which would mean that, you know, the Ark probably didn't travel that far, to get to the mountains of Ararat, as we know from the Bible, where the Ark finally settled. And Noah migrated down from that point, and all of the people migrated, and then eventually we know that they go to the Plain of Shinar, and then you got the Tower of Babel story and dispersion of people from that point.
It's logical to think that Noah and his family would have gravitated back home, which suggests again that area of Babylon and where the garden was and where we find Baghdad, that whole river valley, which through the centuries afterwards became the route, even if we get down to the Babylonian captivity, the Israelites, when migration occurred back to Israel, it followed that same river valley north and west and mm-hmm. came into Israel from the northeast, it would have been, to what's now Israel. So that's, well, I guess that's why they call it Fertile Crescent. That's where
flourished.
Yeah.
It's where people lived. Mm-hmm. And the early empires, of course, emanated from that. And the first empire after Noah was the Nimrod, and his empire, because he was not only a mighty hunter, but he was a mighty hunter of men, turning the hearts of man away from God and towards him. So we kind of call him the first Antichrist, if you will, after the flood, because he was, that's exactly what he was doing. He was turning the hearts of man away from God to himself.
We've had pale imitations of that ever since.
And we have, over and over again. And of course, there will be, the first beast, or the Antichrist, will rise up again when we have this 10-nation alliance coming together in a one world order, if you will. And the Antichrist will come from a small, unknown place, seemingly insignificant, and will wind up killing three of the kings, or three of the leaders of three different regions around the earth, around the world, and then he will become in charge of, he will make himself ruler over the whole world. And then basically all hell breaks loose
looking at current events, I'm estimating maybe next Wednesday.
Well, it could be.
If we make it through the week.
Yeah.
Yeah, you look at events that have especially happened over the past 2 years, and you wonder, okay, you know, how close are we? And now with this situation going on in Russia and Ukraine, it's like, okay, we got wars. The Ukrainians weren't warring against Russia. Russia just invaded. And, of course, we look over to China, and China's making threats against Taiwan. And the great savior, which used to be America, is we're doing everything that we can to kind of step out of the world picture and weaken our economy to such a point where we couldn't help even if we wanted to.
Here's a relevant current event that just is happening today, right now. The European Union is put together an emergency entrance process for Ukraine into the European Union. Now, that's
an application. They went in, I guess it went in yesterday.
So if by today, Ukraine is a European, part of the EU, I mean, this pushes America into the runner-up spot in terms of leadership in this particular crisis, and probably portends a rising of the European Union to a position of more prominence than it has been, and suggests that we're diminishing, which disturbs me greatly.
Well, it should disturb all Americans greatly. I mean, we don't necessarily need to be in everybody's backyard, but at the same time, we were a restraining force against, evil in the world. At least we used to be, when we believed in God. So now we've got, and I'm not saying that America doesn't believe in God, but we have shifted, especially our political leaders and our governmental leaders. There are probably more people not believing in God these days than are believing in God in the United States. And so, our prominence in the world is diminishing, and we don't have the fortitude to say, wait a minute, this is wrong, and so we need to do something about it, which we would have done 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't have let this happen to Ukraine 10 years ago. Even probably 3 years ago, we wouldn't have let it happen. But now with the crumbling leadership that we have, it's happening. And other things will happen. And in my mind, if we continue down this path, we will quickly see the emergence of a a ten nation federation.
Federation
that comes out of all of this eventually, and then that opens the door to the tribulation and to the Antichrist appearance,
and also explains why we are not a factor in the Book of Revelation. As far as we can tell, there's no mention of a predominant Western power in Revelation.
No, there isn't. We're going to be one of the 10 regions. There's going to be a matter of fact, back in talking about the United Nations, the United Nations back in the 60s put out a document where they had a map of these 10 regions.
Really?
And there was, North America, and there was South American region, and North America was us and Canada, all of Canada, and South America, of course, was everybody else down south of us, and so that made up two regions, and of course you had the Europe region, and then the Asian region, but they had already broken it up into 10 regions. So this concept of you would say, okay, well, you can break up the globe into 12 regions or 50 regions, but why 10?
Mm-hmm.
But that was real early on in the United Nations, and so it would not surprise me if it all comes together rather quickly. I don't think it's going to be tomorrow, but how many years down the road, it doesn't look like we're too far away.
Well, it looks like these changes are coming hard and fast, much faster than I ever would have expected. Assuming that what I'm concluding here is anywhere near accurate, and it's disturbing. We don't normally get political, but we got a dose of history and science and theology and a whole lot of information today from Dr. Don. Don, thank you very much. I want to mention, too, that Don is a member of the Board of Creation Moments, their website, creationmoments.com. If you'd like some reassurance, and it is reassuring to understand why science can and does support the biblical story of creation, you can find information to that end on creationmoments.com, their website. Don, we'll talk to you next week and look forward to that. Have a great week.
All righty. We'll see you then.
Bye-bye.
See you next week, Don.
Bye-bye.